I'm Joshua Slocum, and this week on Disaffected. The congressional melodrama continued this week with another parade of pain from our elected officials as they opened the second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. Also, just like we suspected, trans activists are interpreting President Biden's executive order on gender identity to mean that, yes, we do have to let teenage boys compete against girls in high school sports. And who's leading us down this road? The American Civil Liberties Union. Finally, we're going to look at the tragic consequences of affirming the trans delusion in children. Traumatized gay teen boys are prostituting themselves on social media while adults either look away or call them brave and stunning. All this and more this week on Disaffected. Welcome to Disaffected. I'm Joshua Slocum. This show talks about the relationship between the abuse dynamics that often happen in the home that we are more familiar with in terms of domestic violence and child abuse, having to do with personality disorders, and how this behavior has become normalized and mainstreamed and has started to structure the political and public conversations we have with lies, misdirections, and bullies calling people victims. This week, of course, everybody's thinking about Donald Trump's impeachment trial, which I learned just before we started recording today. He's been acquitted again. I haven't kept up with the whole thing, but I'm seeing exactly the same stuff that I was talking about in past episodes from others like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib. Confected emotional misdirection from our elected representatives in order to inoculate themselves against legitimate criticism for the actions they're taking and make people silent and afraid to say anything because we don't want to be mean about their pain. So let's take a look at how Congressman Jamie Raskin opened up the impeachment trial this week.
My youngest daughter, Tabitha, was there with me on Wednesday, January 6th. It was the day after we buried her brother, our son Tommy, the saddest day of our lives. Also, there was my son-in-law, Hank, who's married to our oldest daughter, Hannah, and I consider him a son too. And then there was a sound I will never forget, the sound of pounding on the door like a battering ram. The most haunting sound I ever heard, and I will never forget it. My chief of staff, Julie Tagan, was with Tabitha and Hank, locked and barricaded in that office, the kids hiding under the desk, placing what they thought were their final texts and whispered phone calls to say their goodbyes. They thought they were going to die. I hugged them, and I apologized, and I told my daughter, Tabitha, who's 24 and a brilliant algebra teacher in Teach for America. Now, I told her how sorry I was, and I promised her that it would not be like this again the next time she came back to the Capitol with me. And you know what she said? She said, "Dad, I don't want to come back to the Capitol." Of all the terrible, brutal things I saw and I heard on that day, and since then, that one hit me the hardest.
Okay. This is going to be a little bit bracing. I don't buy any of this. And I find it offensive. And I find it disgusting. I am very sorry that the Raskins lost their son to suicide. That's kind of pain. It has to be the worst kind of pain that somebody can go through. All death is distressing, but the death of a child, especially a suicide, is something I would not wish on anyone, no matter how ill-disposed I might be to them. I'm sorry that that happened. Nobody deserves that. However, what does that have to do with Donald Trump's impeachment trial? What does his daughter's fear have to do with Donald Trump's impeachment trial? Daddy, I don't want to come back here. I could be wrong here, and I'm sure many people will tell me that I am, but I got to tell you my honest opinion here. I didn't see any genuine emotion. I saw a Lifetime television movie with over-dramatized production values. Why would you drag the death of your son into this? And the only thing I can think of is that this inoculates an elected representative against criticism, because it instantly and rightly pulls on our sympathy strings, right? A father who's lost a child, and even worse, to suicide. That's what makes it so low. That's what makes it so gross. It's like with Rashida Tlaib. I don't see any actual tears. I see strategically timed choking up. And maybe I'm wrong. And if I am wrong, if there's any way to show that I'm wrong, I'll come back and talk about it. And I'll admit it. But this febrile atmosphere that we are in right now, the hysterics and the histrionics that are front and center every single day. This entire trial has been elected representatives standing up there and talking about my pain, my trauma, how this is going to last. I mean, it's grotesque. It makes my skin crawl because it's so goddamn fake. It is so goddamn fake, and people are falling for it. This past week, my neighbor's son killed himself. He left the house, got a pistol that his parents didn't know he had, 19 years old, and shot himself dead. My neighbor and her husband are going to carry that pain with them for the rest of their lives. No matter how much therapy they get, no matter how much comfort they get from friends, nothing is going to change that. And even if they intellectually come to the place where they understand that, you know, they tried to get him into counseling, they didn't know that he had a gun, there was no way for them to know, they're going to blame themselves. It's a horrible thing. It's horrible for my neighbors. It's horrible for the Raskins. But I can't imagine my neighbors or most other normal people dragging this tragic event into another, a situation where it's not appropriate. What happened at the Capitol, the riot in the Capitol, was bad enough on its own. But it doesn't have anything to do with the tragic death of Jamie Raskin's son. And the reaction of Jamie Raskin's daughter and his choking up on camera has nothing to do with whether or not Donald Trump was guilty or should not be impeached. And I've got to tell you, it reminds me of, I've talked about the wounded bird camouflage on this show before, the way certain manipulative people will make themselves appear to be vulnerable or fragile or innocent in order to deflect criticism because we feel bad. You know, somebody's a little bit unstable or somebody's feeling really tender. We're going to let them get away with more stuff. That's what this looks like to me. I wouldn't have a thing to say, except I'm sorry, about the death of their son. I wouldn't be talking about this if he hadn't dragged this into this incredibly consequential political trial. We citizens deserve better than this. The question of whether Donald Trump was responsible for the riot at the Capitol, however you feel about it, cannot be decided on the tears or the strategically timed tears of the people who are trying to try him. This is less like I know it's not a courtroom, but this is supposed to be something like a courtroom. This doesn't look like any courtroom I've ever seen before. It looks like a melodrama. And that's all I have to say about that. So we'll take a break and come back with a little bit more. Stay with us. So you remember a few shows ago when I talked about one of Joe Biden's first actions as president when he signed the executive order banning discrimination on the grounds of sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity. And for those of you who don't understand what gender identity is, it's the notion that people have an internal subjective sense that they are male, female, or not male and not female. My shorthand for it is a gendered soul. It's the idea that independent of the physical arrangement of your body, that you have an internal essence that tells you you are a woman or you are a man. It's a very new idea, and it's been slipped in there, and people think it's normal now, but it isn't normal. It's a bunch of nonsense. I have no idea what it feels like to feel like you're a woman. I have no idea what that means, and nobody else does either. But it's very convenient, right? Because it's subjective. You can't see it. People can ask for proof, but there's nothing you can give them that would prove it. And we are now supposed to treat gender identity, which is another way of saying self-identification, self-assertion of your sex or your gender, is supposed to control over the actual objective reality. And I said I had concerns about what this executive order was going to do because it put together the concepts of sex, biological sex, sexual orientation, whether you're gay or straight or bi, with this new gendered soul called gender identity, and clearly wanted to make gender identity live on the same level in terms of determining public policy or even be supreme over the actual reality of sex or the uncontroversial notion of sexual orientation. And I said, well, you know, there are people who are worried that this is going to mean that the federal agencies subject to this order are going to have to do things like allow teenage boys in public schools to go into the girls' locker room, to go into the girls' bathroom, that it may allow teenage boys to compete on girls' sports teams because it's simply based on gender identity. And so many people on the left right now don't want this to be real. I think a part of them knows that people like me who are talking about this are right, that there's something very sinister going on here, and that, yes, you are actually being told that if a boy who's 15 years old says he's a girl, that you have to believe he's a girl, you have to repeat that he's a girl in public, and you have to let him go into the girls' locker room, and you have to let him compete on the girls' track team or whatever the sports team is. Where's the thought for the girls here? Thankfully, lawmakers in some states are waking up to this nonsense, this extortion, that because of the way the power flows in this situation, is taking away the rights to privacy, the opportunities for scholarship, and the opportunities for fair and decent and honest competition from girls. Because while there are a few cases of so-called trans boys, which are just girls who want you to believe that they're men or boys, wanting to be allowed to go into the boys' locker room, this is not a symmetrical relationship. The sexes are not the same. Men are bigger, men are faster, men are stronger, and men are more aggressive. The people who are going to lose here are girls and women. So in Montana, like in several other states, some lawmakers, and of course they're all Republicans because Democrats have turned tail and been absolutely cowardly shits about this. Not only will they not sign on to this stuff, but they actually criticize their colleagues and call them bigots for trying to protect the rights of young girls and women. A couple of Republican lawmakers proposed a bill in Montana that would bar this kind of nonsense behavior, that would require that sports teams in public schools remain segregated by sex. I want to show you an exchange between one of the proponents of the bill and a representative of the ACLU. And this is Representative Derek Skies. He is in the Montana House of Representatives and the Montana House Judiciary Committee. I'm sorry that I could not find the name of the woman from the ACLU. All I know is her name is Miss S. It's amazing how many video clips out there simply don't label who the people are. So I'm sorry, but she's just Miss S. Let's take a look here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. S. So let's jump ahead 20 years, say, in the future. And if we don't, if this bill doesn't pass, would you support a women's sports team that would have all transgender biological males as transgender women?
Can you, Representative Skies, can you say that question one more time? I really want to make sure that if I answer, I understand what you're asking.
You understand.
You bet, Mr. Chair, Ms. Hess. My question is, if we allow, and almost everyone's saying anecdotally there's one or two of these instances, these are super rare, I'd like to jump forward to where maybe they won't be so super rare. So would you agree or would you support an all-women's team having all transgender biological males?
Representative Skies, I will just say, and I apologize if this doesn't answer your question, I don't want to speculate, but what I will say is that transgender women are women, transgender girls are girls, and we are going to support bills that promote and protect their civil liberties and their civil rights.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll write that down as a yes.
Oh, this is gold. Did you see her? Talk about a deer caught in the headlights. Can I just make sure I understand the question? Stop it. You understand the question. And you know you're lying. And you know that you're being paid to lie. Because the ACLU has had its moral core ripped out and replaced by personality disordered, abusive people who are running that thing like a shit show. This organization that had earned a reputation as being a defender of freedom of speech, constitutional freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of worship, so committed to these fundamental Western principles, these fundamental American principles, that they defended the right of Nazis to march down the street in Skokie, Illinois. Look at where they are now. And look who's helping. Look at this young woman. She's barely, I would say, 10 years older than the senior girls in high school who are going to be affected by this. And she's taking her paycheck to stand up in the Montana House Judiciary Committee meeting room and defend the right of boys and men to call themselves girls and to replace girls in the girls' sporting world. I've already talked about this. You can find these cases all over the place. Just go on Google. We've got an active court case right now in Connecticut where two young men, two boys, calling themselves girls, have been competing on the track team. They have literally broken all of the records for girls track, and they have displaced actual girls from competitive slots and prize-winning slots that might give them scholarship opportunities. And this woman is doing this for the ACLU. My, how they've fallen. And look at how they lie. Look at, I mean, she knows. I don't know why she's willing to say what she's saying, but she is willing to say it, and she knows that she's lying. And she is trying to notice this too. She's using protective camouflage so that she won't be too directly criticized. The sort of giggle, the head tilt, the feminine affectations. That I just want to make sure I heard you. I just want to make sure I understood. This is a farce. It's a farce and it's ridiculous. And there's only going to be more of this, folks. Because this thing is steamrolling across the country. We are living in a country right now where decent people are terrified of saying in public that boys are boys and girls are girls. and that they should not be given puberty blockers that interrupts the natural maturation process that comes with adolescence, that they should not be put on cross-sex hormones, which have the result usually of sterility, taking away your ability to have children in the future, bone loss, heart disease, hugely elevated rates of cancer. Cross-sex hormones are poison to the human body. That which the female body needs is poisonous in the same quantities in men, and vice versa. Testosterone, if you could see what testosterone does to a young woman, it's tragic. The voice lowers permanently, and it sounds sort of like a male voice, but their chest cavity and their voice box aren't physically as large as the typical male, so it ends up sounding like a strange male frog voice. That will never go away. Some of the hair growth that happens when these young women decide to detransition and say, I made a terrible mistake, I shouldn't have done this. They can't get rid of that. They can't get rid of the voice. They're going to have health problems that follow them around for the rest of their lives. And we are living in a country where somebody like me saying this on a podcast right now, I'm looked at by good people as a bigot because I don't want children harmed this way. It's outrageous. We're going to talk a little bit more about what's going on with the so-called trans kids after a break. Come back. Welcome back. This segment is going to be a little bit difficult. I'm not going to show you anything pornographic, but I am going to be describing some pretty explicit sexual stuff. Not for titillation, but because in context, it's horrifying. But we need to talk about what's going on with kids right now, kids who think they're trans. I've talked before about the fact that when I was younger, when I was a teenager, one of the big mental and physical health problems afflicting kids, particularly girls, was anorexia. And I haven't actually looked at the numbers, but I think I remember that when Karen Carpenter died in 1983 of anorexia, that's when we really started to hear about anorexia all over the news. It was all over the place in the 80s. And one of the sad things about that, the original researcher who identified bulimia, so, right, anorexia is self-starvation, but bulimia is the binge purge syndrome. So somebody would gorge on food, then go into the bathroom and either stick their fingers down their throat to throw it back up and then go back to eating, or they would, use a purgative, or some people would take a lot of laxatives so that it would just pass through their system without digesting. One of my first jobs in high school was working at a diner, and we had a salad bar and an all-you-can-eat buffet. And there was a bulimic woman who came in every Thursday and would come in at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. She got a small two-person booth. She'd bring her books in, do her work, and she would load her plate up, and she'd eat an enormous amount of food. And then she'd go into the bathroom for about 20 minutes, and nobody could use the bathroom. And she'd come back out, she'd fill up another plate, an enormous plate of food, and just keep going and going through this all over and over and over again. The researcher who identified bulimia has said in interviews in years since, and I think his first work about, I think his first paper on bulimia as a new phenomenon came out in the 70s, and he said later how much regret he had that the awareness of this disorder that came from his publishing this paper seemed to cause it to spread across the Western world. These social contagions. Teenage girls have always been very vulnerable to social contagions and what used to be called and should be called today mass hysteria, hysterical social contagions. You know, that's what was going on in the Salem witch trials when all of these girls all of a sudden said that invisible witches were pinching them, and they were giving spectral evidence in court and fainting and throwing themselves all over the place. It's exactly the same thing. These afflictions are socially contagious. And people who could see the problem with this in the 70s, 80s, and 90s with bulimia and anorexia killing young girls, are making them very, very sick, all of a sudden can't see that the very same psychological problems are going on with so-called trans kids. I don't know if anybody's done any work on this, but I would be willing to hypothesize that you could probably, if you looked at the period maybe of 2010 through today, I would not be surprised to find that the number of documented cases of anorexia, those that come from the fact that somebody's actually checked into a place for treatment so they get counted in the statistics rather than suffering privately at home, I would bet that if there's been a decrease in the amount of anorexia that's recorded, that there has been a commensurate increase in the number of young girls who say they are boys and are trans and want mastectomies and want to be put on puberty blockers and want to be put on testosterone, because this comes from the same root. This is what we call self-harm. This is borderline personality disorder, trauma. Cutting your wrists, cutting your arms up, very typical borderline behavior, especially for a young woman. What's different? What's different about cutting your tits off? How is that not self-harm? How is it not self-harm to poison yourself with cross-sex hormones that your body can never cope with and remain in a healthy state? In future shows, I'm going to drill down into this and I'm going to talk about the trans kid phenomenon, looking at what the parents are doing, because there's a lot of Munchausen syndrome by proxy going on here with parents who get a really great big kick out of being the most special parent who loves their trans daughter or their trans son so very much. These are the people you see out there who are talking about their 6, 7, and 8-year-olds being transgender and getting ready for adolescence so they can put them on puberty blockers. I'm going to have to devote at least an entire show to that. But today, I just want to show you a few examples of what this looks like in the wild on social media. I think the people that I'm talking about here are young men. It's impossible to tell on social media sometimes because the language is so confused, deliberately so. That's part of the trans ideology, is confusing reality so that you can't tell what's left and what's right. But I think these are young men. And I suspect that they are young gay men because they are exhibiting many of the same behaviors that I have seen in young gay men and some of them that I saw in myself. One of the dirty little secrets that nobody wants to talk about is that if you look at the family backgrounds of, and I'm just going to talk right now about gay boys. I'm not saying this is or is not applicable to young lesbians. It's just not something I know as much about. So I'm talking about boys. When you look into the background of gay men, gay adolescents, these boys, hugely disproportionate number of them come from traumatic and abusive households. That is a fact. It's documented in the literature. It's not a coincidence. And it's not really plausible that all of the abuse they get is from homophobic parents. Some of the parents absolutely are homophobic. But the trauma is not all from that. A lot of these parents show signs of personality disorders, parentification of their children, Munchausen syndrome by proxy. So when I was a teenager and inducted into the world of gay male socializing and gay male sexuality, pederasty, grown adults, grown men, sexualizing or seducing teenage boys was rampant. Rampant. If I went to a social dance at the Lesbian Gay Center at 16, 17, 18 years old, There were plenty of older men there. We called them chicken hawks. We have a name for it, chicken hawks. Ready to pick up young boys. And it didn't, you would, maybe you wouldn't be surprised. School teachers, priests, psychologists, counselors. And all of this was normalized. It was normalized because the way that gay culture developed without an outlet for a healthy sexual maturation, all sorts of pathologies have riddled the psyches of gay men. And so we young gay men are brought into a world that is full of drugs, not just alcohol and marijuana, but hard drugs, cocaine, speed, those kind of party drugs. Libertine sexuality, orgies, extreme promiscuity. What the young ones now call chem sex, which is where they get blitzed out of their goddamn minds on drugs and then go and have dangerous sex. This hasn't changed, but the way that they understand themselves has changed. So I see these boys, these young gay men online, and I see traumatized boys who come from broken homes and abusive homes, who are becoming drug addicts, who are trying to become surgery addicts, and they think that they are growing up and becoming the person they're supposed to be, but what they're doing, it's not their fault. What they're doing is they're slowly killing themselves. They are suffering from borderline personality disorder, almost certainly. You don't need a degree to see it. And they're not getting any help because the people who should be helping them are either ignoring it or they're calling them brave and stunning. They are validating it. It would be as if we went back to 1988 and if a young girl said, I'm so fat, I need to starve myself, we'd be saying, you go, girl, be your true self, be your authentic self, lose that weight. That's what we're doing with these so-called trans kids today. So I want to bring up here on the screen a Twitter thread from a young man, and there are so many of them out there, their accounts are utterly pornographic. So let's see if we can get to this person's Twitter profile to set the stage for what we're talking about here. I'm not going to name these people. I'm not even going to use their Twitter usernames because they're already setting themselves up to have this follow them the rest of their lives. And I don't want to make that any worse, but I do want to talk about this. So this is his Twitter bio, Violet, trans girl, NB thing. NB stands for non-binary. Furry, to mask and dog. Furries, if you haven't heard of them, this is a new identity. It's almost as sacred as your gender identity. It means that you identify as an animal character. So you'll see furry parties and furry costume shows and live action role play where people show up dressed as wolves, often highly sexualized. They're, you know, dildo tails, these sorts of things. Twitter hates me, da-da-da-da-da. BLM, Free Palestine. Typical overwrought, in some ways, teenage self-description. And the first tweet in this series says, fed up with everything, just gonna regress back into being a cis gay. Cis, C-I-S. If you're not familiar with this, it's more made up magic language. It's supposed to be the counterpart to transgender. So instead of transgender, if you are born in the right body and you're a man who knows you're a man, you are cisgendered. It comes from the Latin prefixes trans and cis, which have to do actually with chemistry and polarization. Don't ask me how it got here. But what they mean when they say cis is normal. Not trans, not mentally disordered, not confused. Of course, they wouldn't agree with my definition there. So I'm fed up with everything, and I'm just going to regress back into being a cis gay. Sweetheart, you are a cis gay. You are a young gay boy. That's not a regression. That's reality. You are not a girl. You are not non-binary. You are not a furry. You're not a dog. You are a young gay boy. This is how nuts this stuff is. So the conversation goes on. Next one says, friend writes and says, please don't. That will make you feel like crap. Okay. Next one in the series. But I don't have the money to be who I need to be. So it's like, what do I do? I don't have the money to be who I need to be. This is what they're saying. They need money to have surgery, to pay for cross-sex hormones that will have a slightly feminizing effect on the fat distribution of your body, although it's not going to change your skeleton. It's not going to change the size of your cranium or your jaw or your brow bone or any of the other things that identify you as male. Your authentic self costs money. Okay? So, and again, this is, leaving aside the trans stuff, this is the kind of thing that you see teenagers validating each other doing. You see these kinds of conversations. If you've ever heard of the pro-Anna websites, meaning pro-anorexia, there was a big kerfuffle about that, you know, maybe 10 years ago when people got alarmed at how many websites were out there dedicated to glamorizing anorexia and actually giving manuals and peer support to young women who wanted to learn how to be, excuse me, better anorexics. This is the same thing. They reinforce themselves in their delusion because there are no adults in their lives who are looking out for them. So a friend says, not be your false self, or don't be your false self. So regressing back to being a cis gay, what he actually is his false self. And then we get to, do we have the, what's the last one here? No, that's probably enough. The conversation continues to go on like that. This is representative. I don't expect you to know that, but I've seen hundreds and hundreds of conversations like these with these young people who are severely traumatized, severely psychiatrically disturbed, but probably not irreparably psychologically disturbed. Right? I talk about cluster B disorders on this show, and I say, and I will say again, by the time they get into adulthood, real adulthood, you know, 30 or more, much less chance that somebody with a cluster B personality disorder is going to get better. Possible? Yes. Statistically, fewer and fewer the older you get. These people are, excuse me, these are kids, though. These are teenagers. I remember what it was like. I was never quite this bad, but I did participate in a lot of this dangerous gay subcultural stuff when I was younger, and I was really messed up in the head and on a lot of drugs a lot of the time. And I'm here now. These kids can be helped, but nobody's helping them. In part because we grown-ups are clapping for this stuff. Oh, I know. I know you're objecting right now. You're saying, oh, no, I would, you know, this is way too far. When I say I just want to support trans kids, I just mean I want them to live their best life or whatever pablum, you know, you want to put that in. This is all the same thing, folks. When you affirm and validate a young person who says they were born in the wrong body, whether or not you are actively encouraging this kind of self-destructive behavior and probable chemical dependence and abuse of cross-sex hormones, you are still setting the stage for it. You're still saying that this is normal. These kids are coming out like a butterfly from a chrysalis. Stop it. There's another one. I'm not going to show you this. It's so pornographic, I couldn't even figure out how to redact these tweets. But another conversation I saw on Twitter, this is heartbreaking. This boy, from his appearance, could be anywhere from 17 to 21 years old. His account is full-on pornography. He calls himself a they-them slut. They-them meaning these are my pronouns, they and them. Sometimes he's non-binary. Sometimes he's a trans girl. I couldn't believe it when I opened the timeline. It looks like child pornography. This young man has stripped himself off, shaved his body completely, has done up his hair and makeup to look something like Marilyn Monroe, with his entire naked body hanging out, pushing his ass back like this and going, "Daddy." Full of pictures, lying on the bed with his ass facing the camera, with his scrotum tucked between his legs to simulate the look of a naked woman seen from behind. They, them, slut. I need to get pegged real hard in the ass tonight by a non-binary person. And then, in a very borderline way, a few minutes later, I fucking hate gender. Why can't this stop? These are young people in torment. They've been abandoned. And if somebody doesn't help them, I can tell you exactly what is going to happen to them because I've seen it and I've experienced some of it. These young men are going to get raped. They're going to get drugged and raped by older men. Some of them are going to be trafficked. Some of them are already looking at prostitution as a career choice. They're going to get beat up. They're going to get extorted and blackmailed. And some of them are going to get killed. That is the reality of the pro-drug, libertine, anything-goes, queer, radical sexuality world. It was bad 30 years ago when I was first introduced to it. It's far worse now. I don't have a happy note to leave you with today. None of this is happy. But thanks for joining me. It's important to talk about this stuff. See you next time. Thanks for listening to Disaffected. We've got a new listener line, so if you've got something to say, give us a call. 202-979-2480. And just a note, we do reserve the right to play messages on the air. If you like this podcast, please share and please subscribe. We're on Apple, iTunes, Spotify, Rumble, YouTube, and anywhere you get your podcasts.